A day in the life of a Slaanesh cultist. Morning in the hive begins not with sunlight, but with the flicker of neon signs and the distant grind of machinery. In this imperial city of endless night, most souls wake to the klaxon of a shift alarm and the drudgery of another day of thankless toil. Me, I wake up to screams. The muffled cries echoing through the ventilation shafts are faint. Someone's entertainment or punishment, it's hard to tell, and frankly, it doesn't matter. For me, it's a comforting sound. Call it a twisted lullaby lingering from the night before. I open my eyes in the gloom of my hab unit, a tiny room barely wider than a coffin, and I actually smile. Another glorious morning in the service of the Dark Prince. Another day as a Slaanesh cultist, alive and, well, as close to happy as one gets in the Imperium of Man. I stretch out on the stiff cot, wincing pleasantly at the aches in my muscles. The pain from last night's activities flares up and down my arms, thin red lines crisscrossing my skin beneath the bandages. It hurts, yes, but the pain is a welcome reminder that I'm still here, that I felt something real. In a life starved of sensation by design, even pain becomes a gift. I swing my legs to the floor and peel off a stained cloth I used as a bandage. Beneath, carved into the flesh of my forearm, is a half-healed symbol, a curling rune that would get me executed on sight if any imperial official recognized it. I call it a devotional scar. The Inquisition would call it heresy of the highest order. Six cuts, artfully intertwined in the mark of Slaanesh. I think it looks rather pretty. My morning routine used to involve muttering the standard prayer to the God Emperor and choking down a ration bar. Now, the thought of that makes me snort. Instead, I whisper a different kind of prayer under my breath as I get to my feet. A hushed, reverent thanks to my true patron, Slaanesh, the Lord of Excess, the Dark Prince. The name alone sends a little thrill through me, like a spark dancing on my nerves. Dangerous words to speak aloud in a hive city under imperial rule, but in the privacy of this dingy hab, I can afford a bit of blasphemy. I catch a glimpse of myself in a shard of cracked mirror propped against the wall, wide eyes that haven't fully come down from last night's high, hair tousled and still streaked with a faint line of dried violet dye near the tips, a souvenir from a recent experiment in self-expression. My face looks the same as always, yet not. There's a hunger in my expression that never used to be there back when I was just another soul-crushed worker bee. Back before I found meaning, or created it, depending on your perspective. I run my tongue over my teeth. I swear I can still taste the residue of obscura smoke and the tang of coppery blood from the hours prior. It's not unpleasant. With a sigh of contentment, impatience, maybe both, I shrug on my day clothes. Plain gray coveralls, scuffed boots, the uniform of the Anonymous. If you saw me on the street now, you'd think I'm just another faceless drone off to the manufacturum floor, and that's exactly the point. Blending in is an art form for us cultists. Out there in the hive, I wear the mask of a loyal imperial citizen, albeit one with a slightly strange glint in his eye. But in here, beneath these coverings, my flesh still bears the hidden script of my true allegiance, tattooed sigils on my chest, that scar on my arm, bruises that trace patterns only my fellow devotees would recognize. Every day is a performance, and I'm about to step on stage again. I lock the door of my squalid little hab unit behind me. Not that it would stop a determined intruder, but one must keep up appearances. Stepping into the corridor of the hab block, I'm greeted by the usual morning tableau of hive city life. Flickering lumen strips casting a sickly yellow light, the stench of too many humans packed in too little space, and somewhere down the hall, a baby wailing and a couple screaming at each other. Ah, home sweet home. I descend a cramped staircase and pass by my neighbor on the landing, a hunched old woman in a threadbare administratum robe. She gives me the usual suspicious side eye she always does. To her, I'm just that quiet young man who works long hours and keeps odd hours. If only she knew the truth. She clutches a little pendant of the Emperor on his throne as I approach, lips moving in silent prayer. Perhaps she senses something off about me, some whiff of heresy in my scent. Or maybe I'm just imagining it. I flash her a polite smile anyway. Morning, I offer, voice steady. She just spits on the floor, not quite at me, but close enough, and shuffles past. Charming. No matter. I step out of the hab block into a vast thoroughfare teeming with the morning shift crowd. It's a canyon of plasteel and rockcrete. Hab towers rise on either side, disappearing into smog and shadow above. Overhead, great gantries carry cargo trams and servitors hauling loads of God Emperor knows what to places I'll never see. The air tastes of machine oil and decay. Hundreds of us, all in drab work uniforms, merge into a slow-moving river of human misery, flowing toward our designated places of toil. The people around me have the usual hive-dweller look. Glazed eyes, shoulders slumped, minds likely preoccupied with trying not to think at all. Thinking leads to despair in this place, unless you're like me and found an alternative. As I join the flow, I slip into character. Back straight, but not too proud. A menial shouldn't swagger. Eyes downcast just enough. I wear the meek, dutiful mask that got me through years of this life before my awakening. Inside, though, I'm humming a cheerful little tune from last night's revel. It's still stuck in my head. A shivering melody one of our cult's musicians played on her custom lyre, using strings of... Actually, I think those were gut strings. Hard to tell in the dark, but it sounded divine in a profoundly wrong way. The memory almost makes me giggle aloud, which would definitely blow my cover. I bite the inside of my cheek until I taste blood, grounding myself with the sharp sensation. Focus. You're just a regular guy heading to work. Nothing to see here, officers. The manufactorum where I labor away my cover identity is a towering edifice of iron and soot about a kilometer from my hab. Or perhaps I should say, one of many manufactura. There's an endless number of them in this district. Mine specifically refines promethium fuel cells. It's a dull, dangerous job. Monitor gauges, adjust levers, pray nothing explodes. Day in, day out. A year ago, I thought this was all my life would ever be. Now it's just a necessary charade. I arrive and file in through the security checkpoint with the rest of the cattle under the watchful eye lenses of servitor skull drones and a bored enforcer guard. I swipe my ident tag and murmur a flat morning when my shift overseer nods at me. He's too tired to care who I am as long as I show up and meet quota. Perfect. Before work officially starts, there's the mandatory morning prayer. We gather on the factory floor beneath a gargantuan, half-rusted Aquila emblem. A tinny vox caster broadcasts, the voice of the local ministorum priest leading the recitation. O Emperor, guide our hands in labor, keep us from sin. I mumble along with everyone else, head bowed, hands clasped as if devout. I can practically recite the whole thing in my sleep from decades of repetition. But today, as always now, while my lips worship the Emperor, my mind drifts to last night's sacrament instead. The secret hymn we sang in praise of Slaanesh, the way it made my heart race with wicked joy. I bite my tongue and force myself to look appropriately pious. Can't have the machine spirit of the security cams catching a smirk on my face during prayer. Finally, the droning prayer ends, and with a collective sigh, everyone shuffles off to their stations. I slip into my assigned booth among the rows of refinery controls. The next 12 hours stretch ahead, each to be filled with monotony. At least, that's what my colleagues will experience. Me? I've learned to make the most of this time. As the great engines rumble to life and the air fills with the smell of hot metal and chemical fumes, I settle in and start flipping toggles and checking pressure dials. To any observer, I'm just doing my duty diligently. Inside, though, I'm multitasking. You see, a cultist's work is never done. Between the endless routine adjustments, I let my eyes wander surreptitiously. No one nearby. Good. From a pocket in my coverall, I retrieve a tiny folded scrap of paper. On it is scrawled a half dozen names and brief descriptions, potential recruits that one of my fellow devotees identified among the workforce. Discontented souls, thrill seekers, or just the broken ones desperate for anything to give them meaning. I recognize one of the names, Lawn, the gaunt young man who mans the coolant monitors two aisles over. I've seen that hollow look in his eyes. He'd probably leap at a chance to feel something other than numb despair. I was like him once. When the overseer isn't looking, I carefully slip the paper back away. Perhaps I'll strike up a conversation with Lawn in the break cantina later. A friendly word, an offer to share my El Ho stick, maybe drop a subtle hint about an exclusive club that meets after hours for those seeking a little excitement. Gotta plant the seeds of temptation gently. Slaanesh teaches that much. The sweetest corruptions often start small and innocent. I return my attention to the console just as a rune light blinks angrily. Pressure in pipe 16B is spiking again. Emperor's teeth. Does nothing in this machine work, right? I twist a valve and vent some steam, the heat washing over me. A few co-workers glance at the sudden cloud of hissing vapor. One of them, old Garen at the next station, shouts over the din, "All right there." I throw him a thumbs up and shout back, "Yeah, just a sticky valve. Got it." He returns to his controls. Garen's a decent sort. Utterly loyal to the Emperor, of course. He probably has a wife and kids in some hab, maybe hopes to save enough throne geld to get them to a better level someday. Nice guy. I wonder how he'd react if he knew the quiet fellow he jokes with during maintenance downtimes spends his nights in orgiastic rituals and profane ceremonies. The mental image almost makes me laugh out loud. I cough to cover it. Hours crawl by. The thrum of machinery almost lulls me into a trance, like the hum of a giant mechanical bee colony. In that white noise, my mind drifts freely. Snippets of memory surface unbidden. The first time I attended a secret gathering in the depths of the hive, how terrified and excited I was. The feel of the dagger in my hand when I made my first offering to Slaanesh. The ecstatic moans of a room full of depraved faithful, all lost in communion. I shake my head slightly, refocusing. Careful. Anyone looking my way might notice the flush on my cheeks. There's a time and place for daydreaming, and it's not while a 10-ton pressure boiler could blow if I don't keep watch. Mid-shift, the klaxon sounds for a half-hour lunch break. Blessed respite for the masses. The machinery grinds to a slower cycle, and we shuffle off to the cantina, sweaty and soot-streaked. I grab my nutrient broth from an automaton server. The gray sludge slops into a tin bowl, smelling like boiled socks, but it's supposedly corpse starch surprise. Delicious. I also pocket a couple of bland protein bars for later. Wouldn't want to run out of energy tonight. I spot Lawn sitting alone at a bench in the corner, staring into his bowl as if hoping to find meaning at the bottom. This is my moment. I slide in across from him, offering a friendly nod. Mind if I join? He just grunts a non-committal reply. Up close, he's even younger than I thought. Can't be more than 20. Gaunt cheeks, dark circles under his eyes, fingers trembling slightly as he lifts a spoon of broth to his mouth. Withdrawal from some cheap stim, maybe. Or just nerves from chronic overwork. Either way, he's ripe. We eat in silence for a minute. I force down a few mouthfuls of the tasteless gruel, then make a face. "Emperor, this slop is awful," I say quietly. In the Imperium, casual blasphemy like that is frowned upon, but minor griping about conditions is common enough. Larn glances at me, probably surprised I spoke at all. I give a conspiratorial half-smile. Tastes like recycled one too many times, but hey, at least it's warm, right? He actually snorts, a tiny hint of humor flickering. "I've had worse," he mutters. "Yeah, same here. Still, sometimes I wonder," I lean forward a bit, dropping my voice. "Don't you think we deserve a bit more than this?" I gesture vaguely to the bowl, the factory, the dreary surroundings. Larn frowns warily. "What do you mean?" Hook set. I keep my tone light as if just idly chatting. "I mean, we bust our backs day in and day out, follow every order, pray like good little drones. And for what? So we can afford the luxury of not starving? Maybe die when some machine explodes or some hive plague comes through? Just feels like maybe life should be more than that. You ever feel that way?" He doesn't answer immediately, but I can see his jaw tense and his eyes drift. He's thinking about it. Eventually, he murmurs, "Yeah, yeah, I do." I pretend to only now notice his shaking hand. "You all right? You look like you could use a pick-me-up." Before he can refuse, I slip a small wrapped Elo stick out of my pocket and offer it. It's one of mine, which is to say it's not standard issue. I lace my smokes with a few crushed bliss petals for a mild, euphoric kick. Nothing crazy, just enough to make a newbie's head swim pleasantly. Larn eyes it, nervous. I don't usually. "No pressure," I say, setting it on the table by his elbow. "Maybe for later. It helped me when I was feeling low." I give him another friendly grin and make to stand. "Hang in there, okay? We're almost through the shift." As I turn to leave, I hear him call softly, "Thanks." I just raise a hand in acknowledgement and walk away, leaving the little gift behind. A small kindness, from his perspective, a little taste of something different. Hopefully, come tomorrow, he'll be curious where he can get more. And thus another soul takes the first sip of poison, one drop at a time. I step out of the cantina into a side hall, checking the chrono on my wrist. Still a few minutes of break left. Instead of heading right back, I detour toward an equipment storage room, one rarely used at this time of day. Inside, among crates of spare parts and rusted tool racks, I find who I'm looking for. A figure in a grease-stained work coat, pretending to inventory a bin of rivets. "Heya, Serix," I whisper. The tall woman turns, and a grin splits her face. Despite the drab coverall and cap, I can see a glint of pink dye at her temples, where the hair meets scalp. A subtle sign only someone like me would spot. Serix is one of us, one of our cult's faithful embedded here as well. "How's it going?" she asks under her breath, as we both appear to rummage through parts. I shrug. "Another thrilling day in the Emperor's service," I drawl dryly. Then more quietly, I pass the list to those it concerns. A coded way to say I've begun work on the recruit names she gave me. She nods, lips twitching. "Praise be," she replies in the same hushed tone. "Anything else to report?" "That shipment from the upper hive, the one our dear demagogue was expecting? It's scheduled to arrive on Platform 6 at shift change," I say. In truth, I'd spent part of my morning subtly pulling up the cargo logs on a secondary cogitator terminal. The cult needs that shipment, exotic narcotics and a few forbidden tomes smuggled in among routine supplies. My access here let me confirm its arrival time. Tell the others to be ready, and be careful, there's been talk of an Arbites inspection in the area. We don't want our surprise party spoiled. Serix mutters a curse. Of course there is. We'll handle it. We don't linger longer than necessary. With a last nod, we part ways. To any surveillance, just two workers fetching parts. But a small thrill runs through me as I walk back to my station. Even here, surrounded by the gray mundanity of Imperial industry, I'm not powerless. I'm a cog in another machine too, one that will, Emperor willing, or rather Emperor not willing, tear this whole facade down one day. And isn't that a delicious thought to savor as I finish out the day's drudgery? The rest of the shift passes with only a few minor hiccups. By the end, my muscles ache from the constant vibrations and my ears ring faintly. Sadly, not from any delightful cacophony, just plain old engine noise. The closing siren howls and blessedly the overseer barks the end of shift. A collective weary exhalation seems to ripple through the workers. We did it, another quota met, another day of our lives ground to dust for the Imperium. Hooray. I clean up my station and join the throng pouring out of the Manufactorum gates. Outside, the evening gloom has settled. Not that you can tell time by the sun here. It's perpetual twilight under the hive's smog layer. Street lumens flicker to life, casting long shadows in the haze. On the corner, a giant hololithic screen crackles and flashes propaganda above us, shifting images of our beloved God Emperor's stern face, an Adeptus Arbites judge with bolt pistol in hand, the words, "Loyalty is duty, heresy is death," scrolling in bold high Gothic. Subtle. I grin up at it in passing, hiding my expression under the brim of my cap. If only they knew how that slogan just fans the flames for people like me. Heresy is death, perhaps. But life under their boot is no life at all. As I walk, I spot Lon among the dispersing laborers, clutching his kit bag. Our eyes meet briefly. To my satisfaction, he gives a tiny nod. More life in him than this morning, it seems. Good. I'll have to follow up soon, but not tonight. Patience. I duck down an alley on my route home. There's something I need to collect. This alley leads toward an old shrine of the Emperor that burned down years ago and was never repaired. A forgotten little ruin in the shadow of taller hablocks. As I approach, I see two figures lurking near the crumbled archway. For a split second, my heart skips. Unexpected company can mean trouble. But then I recognize their stances. It's two gangers from one of the lesser underhive gangs that our cult has dealings with. The taller one, face obscured by a ragged scarf, steps forward. "Package for the choir," he says quietly, eyes darting. A code phrase. The choir is us, a nickname referencing the singing and screaming that often emanate from our gatherings. "Right. I'm the conductor," I reply under my breath, giving the countersign with a wry smirk at the metaphor. He nods and opens a dirty satchel. Inside, I glimpse vials of shimmering liquid and packets of dried, colorful petals. The shipment arrived intact, apparently. High-grade Obscura extracts and pleasure drugs, some stolen, some brewed in chem labs deep in the hive's lawless zones. And a slim data slate, likely containing copied pages from a heretical tome or two. Actual books are harder to come by, but even digital text can hold forbidden secrets. I quickly transfer the contents into my own work bag, tucking them beneath some spare gloves and my protein bars. "Appreciated," I say, slipping the ganger a few folded throne gelt notes as payment. He takes them greedily. Neither of us lingers. These gang couriers don't ask questions as long as they're paid, and the Arbites are none the wiser. I make my way out of the alley, rejoining a larger avenue. The crowd is thinner now, as most have hurried home to whatever passes for family life. Not me. My real family will be gathering soon in the dark corners of this city, and I have no intention of being late. I descend deeper into the underbelly of the hive, weaving through a maze of corroded corridors and partially collapsed passages. The further down I go, the more the smell changes. Less manufacturum smog, more mildew, spice, and a hint of rot. The glow of Hive City lumen strips gives way to flickering chem lamps and candles in alcoves. Graffiti marks the walls here, everything from gang symbols to crude phrases condemning the Imperium. I spot a stylized purple claw symbol at one junction, a discreet sign from our cult, guiding the way. Our gathering tonight isn't in the same place every time. We like to move, makes it harder for nosy authorities. But we have a few favorite spots. This one is known as the Silken Cell among us, an abandoned storage sublevel that our members have redecorated. I slip through a gap in a rusted bulkhead, down a flight of stairs lit by candles that fill the air with a cloyingly sweet incense. At the bottom, two figures flank a makeshift door, their faces hidden behind grotesque carnival masks. I recognize them by their clothes and body shapes anyway, cult brothers on security detail. One wears a leering demon face mask, the other the face of a beautiful noblewoman split down the middle into two expressions. They nod as I approach. "Praise the Dark Prince," I whisper. "His ecstasy awaits within," one replies softly, giving the countersign. They let me pass. Inside, the Silken Cell is already alive with low music and murmured anticipation. The large chamber must have once stored Promethium tanks or equipment. Now it's our sanctum. Rich-hued draperies hang along the walls. Tattered, yes, but dyed in vibrant purples, blues, and pinks that catch the candlelight. Scavenged cushions and salvaged furniture create lounge areas where cultists recline or chatter in cliques. Incense burners release waves of exotic smells, some pleasant like perfume, others sharp like spice or strangely reminiscent of heated copper. The overall lighting is dim, punctuated by the glow of candles arranged in concentric circles on the floor, and a few loom globes draped with colored silks. The effect is dreamlike, otherworldly. I feel a grin tug at my face the moment I enter. This is home. Far more than my drab hab or that emperor-forsaken factory could ever be. Here comes our busy little courier, drawls a silky voice off to my right. I turn and see Marissa, one of the cult's lieutenants, though we rarely use such formal terms. She's lounging on a threadbare purple divan, a wine goblet in hand. Marissa is a sight as always. She still wears the tattered remains of what was once a noblewoman's dress, fine silk now frayed and stained, clinging to her in a way that leaves little modesty. Her left arm is bare and displays a lattice of scar patterns from wrist to shoulder. Deliberate designs carved over years, each one a memory of some ecstatic pain. Her eyes are rimmed in smudged kohl, and they flicker with a hungry amusement. "Did you bring us something fun, love?" I pat my bag. "Fresh from the oven," I reply with a smirk, using one of our little code jokes. Marissa claps lightly. "Fabulous. Go see Orland. He's setting up the refreshments." She tilts her head toward a corner where a stout man tends to a table arrayed with bottles and strange implements. I weave through the gathering, nodding greetings. There's Dimitri, the ex-guardsman who manages our weapons stash, currently checking the edge on a wicked-looking knife while humming along to the background music. Beside him sits Elia, a pale woman with distant eyes, already in a trance as another member gently runs a set of sharp metal claws, those might be implanted, down her back. She shivers in delight. Across the room, two young cultists giggle as they drip hot candle wax onto each other's forearms, seeing who can endure more before crying out. Normal people would see only depravity here. I see devotion, exploration, freedom. Orland greets me with a gap-toothed smile as I unload the contents of my bag onto the table. Blessings of Slaanesh upon you, he says quietly. Orland is our sort of quartermaster and alchemist. He immediately picks up the vials I brought, holding one to a candle to admire the liquid's color. Is this the joy tonic? He asks. Obscura base, laced with spook, and a dash of that Xeno spice the boss acquired, I confirm. Potent stuff. Go easy until the main event. He chuckles, already mixing a few drops into a bowl with other crushed tablets and powders, concocting some communal draft. Easy? Oh, tonight we indulge, friend. The signs are favorable. His eyes gleam with fanatic glee. I know that look. Something special is planned. I take a moment to breathe deep. The anticipation in the air is palpable. Everyone senses it. Tonight isn't just a casual gathering. It's a sacred night. At the center of the chamber, our makeshift altar is prepared. It's a large circular metal table draped in embroidered cloth. Upon it sits an idol of Slaanesh, a small statue carved crudely from some kind of ivory or bone, depicting a lithe, androgynous figure with six outstretched arms. Surrounding it are offerings, flower petals, small bloodstained tools, feathers, candied delicacies, coins from various worlds. A motley collection of things each member considers valuable or sensorial. Six candles burn around it. Always six for the Dark Prince. I shrug off my outer work jacket. Beneath, I wear a simple sleeveless tunic. The air is cool on my skin, but also alive with energy. A low thrumming bass line of strange music echoes from a Vox speaker one of our tech-savvy folks rigged up, a distorted melody with a beat that makes my heart synchronize with it. The demagogue hasn't arrived yet, but he will soon. I notice Sarix, the woman from work, is here now too, having changed out of her grease-stained uniform. She catches my eye and winks, her lips curling in excitement. She's taken a strip of pink cloth and tied it around her arm, a little flair for the occasion. I decide to follow suit from a crate. I retrieve a length of purple satin and wind it around my neck like a scarf. Why not dress up a bit? It's a celebration, after all. Suddenly, a hush falls over the group. The music volume drops low. I turn toward the entrance to see him, our leader stepping into the candlelight. Valus, the demagogue of our little cult, and as charismatic a devil as any I've met. He strides in with an almost theatrical grace. Tall and lean, wearing a long coat fashioned from what looks like flayed leather. I try not to think whose. His face is half covered by a stylized mask resembling a demonic visage, but his mouth is visible, curled in a confident smile. And his eyes. Even behind the slits of the mask, you can feel his gaze, intense and burning with purpose and delight. My friends, he begins, spreading his arms. His voice is mellifluous, carrying across the chamber so all hear the almost musical cadence. Your presence honors the Dark Prince tonight, and oh, what a night it shall be. A soft collective sigh or murmur escapes those gathered. Valus moves into the center by the altar, and we instinctively form a loose circle around him. Like any good preacher, he has command of his flock's attention at once. He speaks of our devotion, of the gifts Slaanesh has bestowed on some of us. Here, he lightly traces a finger along Marissa's scarred arm, and she shivers in pride. And of the gifts yet to come. He reminds us that while the Imperium above would have us numb and shackled, here we reclaim our souls through sensation and excess. It's a familiar theme, but it stirs me nonetheless. Each word is like an electric charge in my blood. And tonight, Valis continues, voice dropping to a near whisper that forces us to lean in. Tonight, our most fervent wishes, our boldest craving to touch the divine, may finally be answered. An excited whisper runs through the circle. I exchange glances with Serix. Her eyes are alight. Valis gestures to two burly cultists near the back. At his signal, they drag forward something. No, someone. A figure bound and hooded, struggling weakly against their grip. I see now. A prisoner. Likely a hapless fool who wandered too deep into the Underhive, or someone our cult targeted specifically. It doesn't matter who they were. Tonight, they're a key to our transcendence. The bound victim is brought to the altar and forced to kneel. One cultist pulls off the hood, revealing a middle-aged man with a gag in his mouth, eyes wild with terror. He's bruised, his temple bleeding. Looks like they subdued him roughly. He's dressed in the grimy remnants of a worker's overall. Perhaps he was one of us, or could have been in another life. Now he's fuel for our prayer. I feel my heart quicken. Sacrifices aren't an everyday thing for us. Those draw too much attention if done carelessly, but when we do them, it's profound. Valus produces a dagger from inside his coat, holding it up so the blade catches the candlelight. It's ceremonial, curved like a serpent's fang, etched with runes. I can almost hear it sing, maybe just my imagination. Several of us, myself included, unconsciously lick our lips, or otherwise react with anticipation. The demagogue begins the ritual chant, and we join in. It's an old rhyme, some words high Gothic, others dark tongue. The air itself seems to thicken. As our voices rise and intertwine, Orland moves among us, handing out small cups of the concoction he brewed. I down mine in one gulp. It's bitter and sweet and burns going down. Almost immediately, my nerves tingle. The drug heightens everything. The glow of candles intensifies. The sound of our chant echoes as if from very far and very near simultaneously. My skin feels hypersensitive to the slightest brush of air. The prisoner at the altar is whimpering behind his gag, tears streaking his face. No one cares. In this moment, I feel not a shred of pity, only exhilaration at what's coming. Valis draws the blade gently across his own palm first. Dark blood wells, and he lets a few drops fall onto the altar cloth. Prince of Pleasure, hear us, he intones. We repeat it back in a susurrus of voices. Hear us, Dark Prince. The room seems to hum. Or is that the warp-charged air itself vibrating? My head buzzes. Whether from the drugs or the gathering immaterial presence, or both. With a flourish, our leader turns the knife and plunges it into the sacrifice's chest. The man arches, a muffled scream tearing from behind the gag, eyes bulging. Valis doesn't aim for the heart, not yet. He expertly avoids a killing blow, instead carving upward slowly to prolong the agony. Blood spills in a hot stream, drenching the altar and the idol of Slaanesh in crimson. The scent of it, iron and salt, fills my nose, oddly mingling with the incense into something intoxicating. The chanting around me intensifies. Some of the others are laughing or moaning in ecstasy as the victim's life pumps out. I realize I'm doing it too. My voice is laughing and sobbing at once, tears of rapture on my cheeks. The waves of sensation from the drug and the ritual crash through me. Every nerve is alive. The pain on the man's face is like a mirror of bliss in my soul. This is what I live for. This is what makes me feel. As the prisoner finally slumps, near death, Valus tilts the man's head back and cuts his throat in one clean swipe. A final gout of blood and the body goes still. The chanting stops abruptly. A heavy silence falls, broken only by our panting breaths and the distant drip of blood off the altar's edge. For a moment, nothing. Then, I feel it. A presence. The hairs on my arms rise, and a collective gasp comes from the circle. In the center of the altar, above the corpse, the very blood hanging in the air trembles, not falling. It swirls as if stirred by invisible fingers. A faint glow, pink and sickly beautiful, emanates from nowhere and everywhere. My vision swims. Perhaps I'm crying again or hallucinating. But no. I see Marissa step back, eyes wide in awe, so it's not just me. A tear in reality appears. Literally, the air itself splits like a curtain being drawn aside. Beyond it is indescribable. Color and darkness, a sense of a vast ecstatic void. And from it emerges a shape. Our prayers have been answered. She is glorious and horrifying all at once. A demonette of Slaanesh stepping daintily into our world. Her form is lithe, feminine yet alien, skin pearlescent with a faint lavender iridescence reflecting the candlelight. She, it, moves with inhuman grace. Where her hands should be, she has claws, long, scythe-like talons that catch the light. Her face is both exquisite and unsettling, with high cheekbones and black, soulless eyes that sparkle with cruel glee. A crown of small horns adorns her head like a twisted tiara. She smiles, revealing pointed teeth. The scent of her presence wafts over us, a mix of the sweetest perfume and the stench of decay underneath. My senses reel. Several cultists outright collapse in ecstasy or terror. I'm not sure which. I find myself trembling violently. Part of me wants to prostrate myself before this vision of my god's realm. Another part, the tiny rational piece left, shrieks in fear that this creature could slaughter us all in a heartbeat. Both feelings merge into something overwhelming, awe. The demonette laughs softly, a sound like tinkling glass and tearing silk. She runs a claw almost lovingly down Valus's chest. Our fearless leader, to his credit, stands proud, though I see his chest heaving. "Great one, we welcome you," he manages to say, voice reverent. Her words pour into the air, each syllable both a caress and a razor. "I smelled your pleasures, little mortals, and I was invited." She looks around at all of us, her gaze lingering on each face. When those alien eyes lock with mine, I feel a jolt like lightning down my spine. My knees nearly buckle, the room seems to spin. "Such fervor," she purrs, "such sweet suffering and delight in your hearts." She drags one claw tip across the sacrificial victim's cheek, scooping up a droplet of blood, then licks the claw with a forked tongue, sighing as if tasting the finest wine. I realize I'm grinning like a madman, tears on my face, hands still stained from where I unconsciously gripped the bloody altar cloth. This is the pinnacle. Proof that our faith is not in vain. The Dark Prince has seen us tonight. Some of the braver or more intoxicated cultists move closer, reaching out as if to touch the demonette, to seek her favor. She allows one devotee to kiss her foot, another to kiss her claw. Marissa pushes forward, eyes alight, and the demonette gently takes Marissa's chin with a claw, examining the tapestry of scars on her skin. "Beautiful marks," the demon coos, and Marissa shudders in bliss at the praise. Suddenly, the demonette's head snaps around toward one of the cultists who has approached too eagerly. A young man nearly delirious on our drug cocktail, arms outstretched toward her. In a blur, she lashes out. A spray of blood arcs across the chamber. The young man's head hits the floor before his body does. It happened so fast I barely registered it. Gasps and shrieks echo. some of terror, some of twisted delight at the spectacle. The demonette licks her claws, a wicked smirk on her lips. Delicious, she sighs, but playtime is short, little ones. The veil beckons me back. Phallus, now splattered with the blood of our unfortunate comrade, simply spreads his arms. Take our offering, graceful one. May our devotion please the Dark Prince. There's a quaver in his voice, but also ecstasy. The demonette's form already begins to shimmer. The fabric of reality strains at her presence. She traces a claw lightly across Valis's cheek, drawing a thin line of blood. We taste your devotion, she whispers to him. Then those black eyes shift to the rest of us. Continue your feast of senses, faithful of Slaanesh. Let the agony never end and the ecstasy never fade. With that, she steps backward into the void from which she came. The tear in reality closes with a faint pop, leaving only the lingering glow and the heavy scent of otherworldly lust in the air. For a heartbeat, we are all silent, motionless. Did that just happen? The headless corpse on the ground says yes, as does the still-bound corpse on the altar. Then pandemonium, of a sort, breaks out, a jubilant frenzy. Some cultists laugh maniacally, others sob with joy. A few rush to the altar, smearing the demon's blood on their faces, like holy unction. I realize I'm panting, every fiber of my being alive with sensation. Fear, triumph, sorrow for the fallen, arousal, joy, all of it swirling together. Too much to process, and yet I crave more. Someone grabs me, and before I know it, I'm locked in a fierce kiss, the metallic tang of blood on our lips. I think it's Serix, or maybe Marissa. It doesn't matter. My senses explode again, body reacting on pure instinct, desperate to feel. Around us, the celebration ignites back into full force. The ritual's success has driven everyone into a state of raw abandon. The music swells louder. When did that start again? A pounding, delirious rhythm. We lose ourselves in it. I won't detail everything that happens in the hours that follow. Much of it blurs together in a haze of pleasure and pain. I remember sharing the last of the drug-laced wine with Orland, laughing as he painted swirling patterns of blood across my chest with his fingers. I recall Dimitri and two others engaging in a contest of who can endure the knife across their thighs, and the look in Dimitri's eyes as he sliced into his own flesh and smiled, as if tasting heaven in the pain. I think at one point I was dancing, actually dancing, to that insane music, stepping over corpses and unconscious revelers, my hands slick with something warm, while others cheered. In that moment, I believe I glimpsed what true freedom feels like. No fear, no limits, just the raw now. Eventually, the frenzy ebbs. People lie about on cushions and rugs, bodies entangled, too spent to move. Low moans taper into silence, broken only by the occasional pant or delirious giggle. Some have already passed out, or perhaps even died from overdose or excess. I see one figure slumped with eyes staring blankly and realize she simply felt too much and her heart gave out. There's a gentleness in that death, somehow. I find myself slumped against the base of the altar, the cold metal soothing against my feverish skin. The candles have burned low, casting long, flickering shadows. The air is heavy with the musk of sweat, blood, and other intermingled fluids I'd rather not name. It smells like sin and satisfaction. Valis is still standing, remarkably. He removes his mask, revealing a face that is both handsome and hard, tear tracks of blood from the demonette's claw streaking his cheek like war paint. He looks around at us with pride. This, he says hoarsely, was a good night. A weak chuckle rises here and there. Understatement of the millennium, really. I manage a grin and raise a trembling hand as if in a toast, though I hold no cup. To Slaanesh, I croak out. Soft voices join. To Slaanesh. A final prayer and thank you, offered up into the darkness before exhaustion takes hold. In ones and twos, those who can still move begin to drift out to find some sleep in their own hiding holes or to return home before they're missed. A few will stay and clean up the evidence in a bit. We always do before first light. Can't leave too much incriminating behind, but for now, we all just bask in what we've experienced. Serix, alive and seemingly none the worse for wear, comes over and helps me to my feet. I'm shaky. The high is fading, leaving a hollowness and bone-deep fatigue in its wake, but also a deep, deep contentment. She smiles, eyes heavy. Hell of a day, huh? I laugh, a raw, scratchy laugh. You could say that. We support each other as we exit the silken cell. The two masked guards at the door give us silent nods, and I notice one of them is clutching his arm. Perhaps the Daemonette nicked him at some point. A bloody rag is tied around the bicep, but he seems blissed out regardless of the wound. Dedication. The trek back up toward the mid-hive is slow. Every stair step aches in my legs. The adrenaline is gone, and all that's left are the bruises and the wonderful, aching soreness of spent passion. Totally worth it, of course. As we near the more inhabited levels, Serix and I part ways with a knowing look. No public farewells. In the light of day, we're strangers again. We each have our own cover lives to slip back into until the next time. By the time I approach my hab block, morning is close. The hive never truly sleeps, but there's a brief lull in the deepest night, and that's past now. I see early shift workers already trudging out for the next cycle. Emperor, has it been that long? My body protests, desperate for rest, but I can't collapse here in the open. I slip inside my building with a group of men and women leaving for work, exchanging nods as if I'm just another poor sod finishing a graveyard shift. In a way, I am, except my labor wasn't for the Imperium tonight. Up the stairs I drag myself, every muscle throbbing. I reach my door, practically fall inside, and shut it behind me. Home. Four metal walls, a bunk, and a sink. Never has this little cell felt more like a sanctuary than after what I just lived through. I catch my reflection in that cracked mirror again and almost laugh. I look like hell. Sweat-drenched, hair matted, face smeared with dried blood in ornate patterns, Orland's artistic handiwork. My eyes are wild, pupils still pinpricks from whatever concoction I ingested. There's a bite mark on my neck I don't remember getting. I look absolutely and utterly alive. I slump onto my cot, the events of the day playing through my mind in disjointed flashes. A few incredulous chuckles escape me. What a contrast. This morning I was just a cog in the great machine, outwardly the obedient servant of the Emperor. And tonight, I danced with demons, literally. I should sleep. I might only get an hour or two before I have to drag myself off to the Manufactorum again. The notion is almost comical. How am I supposed to operate machinery after a night like that? But I've done it before, I'll do it again. In this double life, you learn to manage. As I lie back, a wave of exhaustion and contentment washes over me. There are still streaks of blood on my arms, but I can't even muster the energy to clean them right now. I'll wear long sleeves later. It'll be fine. Before my heavy eyes close, I whisper one final silent prayer. Not to the Emperor, like nearly everyone else in this hive, as they rise from slumber. But to my true Lord. Thank you, Slaanesh, for letting me feel alive one more day. A slow smile curls my cracked lips. I'm exhausted, stained with sin, and completely satisfied. This was just one day in the life of a Slaanesh cultist, and throne damn me, I can't wait to do it all again tomorrow.